Hello, listener, and welcome to Good Copy, Bad Copy, the B2B copywriting podcast. It's good of you to join us. My name's David Maguire. I am the creative director at Radix Communications. And just across the table is our lead copywriter and CEO, Fiona Campbell-Howes.
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing today?
All right, thank you. Although all the clients seem to have woken up at once, don't they? Everybody wants all the writing.
They've come out of their winter hibernation.
They have.
For sure. I don't know if it's... it's just weird. Like, one client wakes up, all the clients wake up. And it's never just the right amount of work, is it? It's like crazy busy like this, or it's you'd like a little bit more. You know, you never just at the right level. That's
and you'd think after, 11 and a half years, we might have been able to get the balance, but I don't think there is a balance to be found, so I think we're in the feast stage of feast and famine at the moment. So
right,
let's bulk up.
This episode, we'll be talking about social media copywriting for B2B. It's something that neither Fiona nor I do a lot of outside of our own social media work. So we have an extended interview with Kate Studley, who's a social media expert at Comment Ground in New York. And Fiona, what did you think of the interview?
There's loads of useful information in there that I didn't know I needed to know.
No, absolutely. So that's all coming up. So if you'd like to send us an email, a voice memo or a tweet, you're more than welcome to do so. You can contact us at podcast@radix-communications.com, or you can tweet us at radixcom. That's RADIXCOM. So we will get on to Kate's interview in a moment. But first, we have some exciting news. And something that our regular listeners will know is an especially big deal for us here at Radix, for we've had a new arrival in that we've welcomed a new chair to the office.
Have you just done this so you could do that jingle?
Yes, exactly that.
Fiona talks about chairs.
We do have a new chair. Yes, I've bought a new old chair off eBay. My very favourite activity.
Another new
outside of B2B copywriting. Obviously.
Well, I'm glad that your change of job title is still not preventing you from buying antique chairs.
I don't know if I'd guess if I was to say antique, but certainly
classic,
a vintage.
Vintage
another
is the word.
Vintage Eames chair for our meeting room. Considering that one fell apart, which I was quite disappointed by, because, you know, these things ought to last forever. But one broke, so I had to go on eBay and find a new one, and it was very enjoyable.
But this is a slightly less padded Eames chair, this one. It's a long way down when you sit into
it. Yeah, I'm quite sad that I don't know off the top of my head what model it is. You know, for all the Eames chairs fans out there, we'll probably put it in the blog.
Yeah, okay, we'll do that.
But it is a bit different from the other ones, which are soft pad chairs.
Yes,
this is not a soft pad chair.
It's definitely not a soft pad chair. I can my buttocks can vouch for that.
Yeah, moving on.
Moving swiftly on. Our copywriting clients often ask us about how the content we write might fit in with their social media marketing, and we don't really specialise in that kind of advice, so I spoke to a social media specialist, Kate Studley, co-founder at Comment Ground in New York, and I started by asking her about the company and its origins on the West Coast.
We are a social media firm that specializes in B2B, financial services, and tech, and other kind of regulated industries. We launched about 5.5 years ago out of San Francisco. So at that time, we were, you know, of course, in the midst of all of the Silicon Valley startup tech scene, and we worked a lot with different types of brands within that kind of scene, both B2B and B2C. But over the past 3 to 4 years, we've really, we moved our headquarters to New York, and we've really started specializing and working mainly in the B2B financial services and tech industries.
Wow. So, and is that something where you're kind of providing them with social support? How involved you get with the content then? Because one of the things that we really wanted to ask you about as an expert in social is how social media and content kind of feed each other.
Right.
So where does your job kind of start and finish from that point of view?
That's actually the start and finish aspect when it comes to content and what we do. There is, you know, there's really not a specific kind of, you know, easy, hard and fast rule to that, because the way we look at social and kind of effective social really is centered on content, right?
So from your point of view, it's not so much that you start from social and build content, or that you build content and then push it out on social. You're kind of having a conversation where both things are happening at once. You're kind of talking about your, you know, who your audiences are and where they're looking and what they want.
Yeah, I think it has to be a really kind of symbiotic relationship at this point in the game, especially where, you know, there's so many brands, even in B2B, pushing out a ton of content across a ton of different channels, right? And a lot of it is really, really good. However, I think that there is not a you think social first or you don't think social first approach across the board. I think it really depends on what the overall, let's say, quarter or fiscal year goals are for that brand, or if it's just a certain campaign, what really makes sense? Do you think about the overall content assets? You know, is this going to have a big email marketing play? Is this going to live in other kind of digital places? Is it even going to live in print? Where does social fit into that? It kind of has to, again, come down to having social be a seat at the content planning table and be a really collaborative approach. I think that's really the only way that things can really make sense, because just because you can put something on social doesn't mean you should, right? So many times, again, going back to that, you know, three tweets per content asset or something anywhere even close to that, you know, I think social media became the cure-all for so many different marketing goals and challenges, right? I think we've moved beyond that place, but it's still kind of like, well, we have this really pretty XYZ asset or video or whatever it happens to be. Let's put it on social. And oftentimes, even if it was designed, you know, sort of thinking social proactively, oftentimes it doesn't resonate or it doesn't quite work for various reasons, where if you have that social person at the table when thinking about this, it can be like, you know what, I think that could work, but let's think about it in this different way. So I think it's just all about that collaboration.
Sure. I mean, I was thinking about, you know, what we were going to ask you, you know, having you know, it's great to have an expert on the subject. And one of the things that we get asked a lot about social and content, and as writers, we have people come to us and ask us a lot about LinkedIn, in particular what used to be called LinkedIn Pulse. It's called something else now, apparently. What's it called now?
LinkedIn Publisher or Publishing, depending on who you're talking to. It's social media. It changes every day, right? The names.
All the time. Is that something where, I mean, because, you know, we write a lot of stuff for people to publish on LinkedIn. Is that the kind of thing where it should be viewed as its own platform, or you should tease content from your own blog, or can you put the same thing in two places, or where does that sort of fit?
Yeah, I think it's such a great question, especially right now. I feel that LinkedIn Publisher is really starting to become something of a more important aspect of an overall social and content marketing approach. First and foremost, typically, the same type of content or same exact, you know, replica is probably not going to work from a blog to LinkedIn Publisher, mostly because, you know, I think that first and foremost, Publisher should be thought about as a personal branding platform or personal blogging or however you want to look at that. It's both, really. And so, you know, it's coming from a person's perspective, whether that's a leader at the company or, you know, a sales expert or a subject matter expert or whatever it happens to be. Whereas typically in B2B, the blogs that many of our clients and other companies have are still more coming from the brand perspective. And even if they have different writers or different profiles of folks who, you know, they typically write from their first person perspective, or have great help from ghostwriters like yourselves or copywriters like yourselves, you know, I think that it typically, it's just a different user experience. So if you think about, you know, going to a blog from a B2B company, you're probably there as a client or as a potential customer, you know, in hopes of getting some how-tos, maybe in hopes of getting the latest product updates and news, kind of learning more about what's going on from the company side of things, even if it's coming from a person's perspective there. Whereas on LinkedIn Publisher, there's really an opportunity to have that point of view and to have kind of that distinct personal slant on things. So the way we look at it is, it really first and foremost depends on what kind of the overall brand blog, and or there could be multiple different, you know, publishing aspects of their site that are like mini blogs. It really depends on kind of what their approach is there and who they have as thought leaders that are writing on LinkedIn Publisher, and seeing kind of what the relationship is between the two. That's kind of first and foremost. If, for instance, a brand has some great blog pieces coming out, the way, and they're kind of written from the brand's perspective, there's always a way for a thought leader or a subject matter expert or whomever it is to take that blog post and, you know, either kind of tweak it or put a spin from their perspective and add their POV to like the top or throughout or whatever it happens to be on Publisher, because that's kind of the user experience that people are looking for there. And at the very basic level, sometimes we see when whomever it is from the company just doesn't have the time, or their team isn't quite ready to be doing something like that yet. A simple thing to do is to have those folks, you know, just do a status update post and link to the blog and say something from their point of view, like, this is a great overview of XYZ and here's why. I think what I keep coming back to here is that, you know, Publisher has this really distinct opportunity to act as that place for that special, you know, kind of perspective and point of view, whether from, you know, a thought leader, a C-suite person, or just like a subject matter expert. Whereas the blog on the brand site is kind of a different user experience.
Yeah. And when you say it like that, you know, about think about the user and why they go to those places, it sounds so obvious. You're like, yeah, of course. Yeah. That's great advice. That makes perfect sense. One of the things I wanted to ask about, I mean, you talk about, you know, it's LinkedIn Pulse, it's LinkedIn Publisher, it's publishing on LinkedIn, it's all of these different names, and everything keeps changing. It feels like in social, stuff changes all the time. Like stuff like,
true,
you know, copy guidelines, like where you can and can't put brand names in the headings, and word counts and character counts and things. Is that true, or is that just a perception that stuff changes that quick? And how do you sort of stay on top of it all?
It's 100% true. And it's 100% frustrating, even from, you know, it's a huge challenge, even from our perspective. There's many times where we're like, wait, when did this change? And we're in there every day. The first thing to keep in mind is that everybody's challenged with this. So take that kind of like, oh God, I can't keep up with it, you know, kind of worried or anxiety aspect out of it, because just recognizing that, you know, even we work in social media, specialize in social media, and we have a hard time keeping up with everything, right? So taking that kind of anxiety out of the mix, if you can, is helpful. The other thing is to kind of figure out what types of things you want to keep kind of up to date on. And I feel like the sources that, you know, the things that most people are looking for to keep up to date on are, of course, copy length, character counts, those types of things, as well as, you know, visual dimensions, what's allowed, what's not allowed from an aspect ratio. Should you have the brand name in the copy? Should you not? You know, all of these things. And I think the best sources, and, you know, there's always so many different sources out there that we always find ourselves coming back to and feeling like, A, they're always freshly, you know, updated for the most part, and B, they're kind of trustworthy and get right to the point, are from Hootsuite's blog, Buffer's blog, as well as Social Media Examiner. They're a little lighthearted maybe for some folks, but they do, you know, they're in social, so they're always updating. And I will say too, that all of the networks are doing a pretty good job these days, especially LinkedIn and Twitter. more so LinkedIn, at publishing regularly on their blogs with things like updates to whether it's their algorithm or, you know, to character counts or, you know, those types of guidelines. So it's kind of a mix. There's not a hard and fast, you know, here's the best source, you know, just sign up for this one, you know, email newsletter and you'll get updated all the time. For us, we always go to those sources though.
Oh, I was hoping there would be like a magic secret course that the social media specialists know about and the rest of us don't. But
hey, maybe some other social media specialist has a better tip. I'm not sure. I feel like those are the best, especially because I personally like to consume my information from sources like that because they do a really great job at removing the fluff. Especially, you know, Sprouts. I missed Sprout Social in that list there, but Sprout Social is another great one that they update their blog a lot with updated visuals and character count type guidelines.
That's great. I think we'll put some links to those in the show notes if we.
Oh yeah, great.
If we remember, we're running short on time. There are a couple of things I wanted to pick up with you, just because you were talking about sort of Instagram stories and things. Certainly with our clients and the places they ask us to write social posts for, you know, the platforms are the same as they were largely like 5 years ago. Is it something where you think Facebook and Instagram still have have they got an important role to play in B2B? Is that still coming, do you think?
You know, I think it is. And here's why. I think there's an opportunity now more than ever to think about what's important and what are the trends that everyone's talking about in the greater marketing landscape, especially for B2B. And I think, you know, the whole trust and the lack thereof that have come, you know, over the last couple of years, not only from social, but also from all marketing and from brands always, there's always that struggle to gain trust from their potential customers as well as, you know, maintaining it with their current customers. And I think that, you know, things like stories is this really wonderful opportunity to reach and resonate with, you know, those words are so buzzwordy, but it's so true, to reach and resonate with target markets in a different way that can allow a brand to show that side of, you know, the personal side, the side that really starts to show their customer that they're in good hands, that the brand understands them kind of holistically. So they're not just trying to sell to them all the time and say, you know, this is XYZ product and this is why you should buy it. This is why you need to upgrade. But instead to show them you've chosen to be our customer. And especially with niche B2B audiences, this is so important. You know, you've chosen to work with us or to, let's say it's a financial services company to custody your assets with us, or if it's a tech company to whatever it happens to be, to put all of your stock in us, right? You're in good hands because we understand you. We understand the things that motivate you and that the things that are important to you, not just in a business perspective. And we've seen things like communities on Facebook growing really organically with really, really super niche B2B audiences that surprised us, honestly. And we learned that, you know, these people wanted to talk to each other and this was the best place for them because they're probably already on Facebook. Whereas, you know, Instagram Stories has this opportunity to kind of show that kind of lighthearted and fun side, show the way that, you know, brands are, you know, resonating, show the way that brands are really representing, I should say, their target customer in different ways, you know, whether that's a cause that they're involved with, the community, or just something that they know kind of is an interest from a holistic view of their target. And I think on that end, I'll just say one more thing is that I've noticed this even in B2B. You know, I read a tip probably about 6 months to a year ago that said, you know, when thinking about your social marketing or your marketing in general, to think stories first. And that was in a very specific capacity. But the more I've thought about this and the bigger stories have become in terms of their capabilities from a business perspective, especially I'm specifically talking about Instagram right now. You know, the more I feel like that statement is true, even when you're thinking copy and writing for those brands or people and thinking, you know, how could this resonate, you know, in a story setting, even if that's not quite where the brand or person is yet. Because I think that if you think that way, it forces you to think a little bit more creatively and a little bit, maybe even with brevity and getting right to the point and saying, you know, know, in a fun way almost, right? So that's something we are trying to take under, you know, advisement for our clients that, you know, instead of thinking of the old school way of, you know, creating visual assets, you know, a video and a few static posts and maybe a copy overlay and something, you know, a GIF or whatever it happens to be, let's think first, like, how could this play out in a in an Instagram story? If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but it's a good way to kind of shift your brain towards what is currently kind of the way folks like to consume stuff on social.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's kind of a nice way of, as you say, just getting in a headspace, even if you're not
right,
going to end up using that channel. So thank you ever so much for being so generous with your time, Kate, and battling through with technology.
My pleasure. It was great.
Before you go, there's one question that I'm keen to hear from as many people as possible from this year. And it's kind of a two-part question. But kind of from your view, what does great content look like? What are the hallmarks of really, really brilliant content? So, like, do you get a feeling in advance about whether or not something's going to engage or not? And the second part of that is, what do you think it is that prevents B2B marketers from doing that kind of work more often?
Such a good question. I think that great marketing content, especially these days more than ever, both visually and or copy, you know, wise, is when it represents something about their customer in an out-of-the-box kind of approach or way. So that, you know, everybody is so oversaturated. And yes, that even saying oversaturated is oversaturated, but it's true. I mean, we're just all so swimming in content. And because content marketing became such a big deal, you know, even in B2B and even in very niche B2B audiences, it's kind of overwhelming, especially when you're a business owner or it's a smaller business or mid-size or really, it doesn't matter if you have a big role at a huge company. How do you have time? Let's be honest, most don't, to actually stop and kind of like read through things, right? So to get that thumb stopping effect, I think it has to really stand out. And it depends on the brand and kind of the goal, how that stands out. But what we've seen lately is, I don't know why this is new, but it feels like it's new to have a brand and, you know, step back and say, not either A, let's put ourselves out there and from the brand even put our point of view on something, say, we believe in this. And I don't, you know, there's so many politics involved in why a brand isn't typically going to do that. But I think a smart marketer will say, you know, hierarchy folks, if this goal this year is to actually stand out and to raise our sentiment or whatever it happens to be that we're tracking, the only way we're going to do this is X, Y, Z, because look at all of our competitors, you know, doing a competitive audit on social even. Everybody is just posting that one visual of the dude playing golf or a golf ball or whatever it happens to be, because we all know that that is an interest of our target customer. We have this opportunity to do better. And here's some ways that we can do that. We can put our point of view. We can think differently. We can think about different interests of theirs. We can show them that they're in good hands working with us, or would be if they decided to work with us in a different way. And it sounds so simple, but it really hasn't happened in B2B all that much yet.
No, I think it's a thing where a lot of people, I think, know the theory, but making stuff happen in practice often gets stuck. And that's why the really good content is not the baseline, you know.
Right.
As it should be. You know, the really good content is the stuff that still really stands out.
Because right.
The people that however they manage to explain it or get buy-in or whatever, that, you know, or just, you know, the good marketer found the good manager and work, you know, but somehow they made that magic happen. It's a shame because that should be just normal, but that's still the stuff that's excellent, isn't it?
Right. And I think that, you know, it comes again from, you know, if that's not a goal that a marketer is being evaluated on, you know, in some way, then why would they do it? Why would they push it? They're already so busy as it is.
Kate, thank you so much for your time. It's a real pleasure to talk to. If our listener wants to carry on the conversation or get in touch with you, where can they find you?
Well, I'm certainly on all the social networks, of course. I'm at Kate Stoodley. That's K-A-T-E-S-T-O-O-D-L-E-Y on Twitter. And I'm on LinkedIn under the same name.
Great. Well, that's super. Thank you so very much.
Well, thanks so much, David. It was a real pleasure.
Thanks again to Kate for being so generous with her time and expertise. I was fascinated to get a view from the other side of the fence. Fiona, what resonated for you?
Well, all of it, really. So, yes, thanks again, Kate, for doing that. It's a brilliant interview. Thank you. So what resonated for me? Well, definitely the fact that often marketers think of social media as an afterthought, or at least after the content. So I think you'll probably agree with me, David, we see a lot of that. So, like, all of this content has been created. Now we need to promote it on social, and can you come up with some social seeds for it? So that we see a lot, without the two strategies being in any way seemingly integrated.
Yeah, to the extent that we will write a piece and they'll get someone else to write the social promotion work for it.
Yeah.
Or we'll just get the social writing for a piece that someone else wrote. And you think, surely this would be a lot better lined up if the person that wrote the thing wrote the tweets and LinkedIn promotion to go with it, because otherwise we have to read the thing all to understand what you have to promote about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Kate was also making the point that a lot of content pieces aren't suitable in their sort of original form for social, or they could be promoted on there in a cleverer way. And I think we don't often see that kind of sort of cross-disciplinary work, if you like, where the social people are talking to us about how best the content can work on social.
And that's why it's so good to talk to people like Kate, and to actually see from their viewpoint. And we're working on a joint blog post with Comment Ground to go into more detail about that stuff. You know, to the extent that when she was talking about when you create content, think story first.
Yeah.
We tend to think of that as storytelling, as the three-act structure and this sort of thing. But I think she was literally talking about Instagram stories.
I did realise that after a while. Yeah, she means Instagram. And I don't think I've ever been asked to write anything for Instagram by any client.
It's certainly a rare one. In the world of rarefied world of B2B tech.
We don't hear about it a lot, no.
And I don't see a lot of people doing it very well on Instagram. Like, I followed accounts that people have recommended about the ones who are, the ones that are doing it really, really well. And they're just really annoying.
I have to say, I can't even remember the last time I was on Instagram, so I'm not the best person to comment about that. But certainly the stuff about LinkedIn definitely resonated with me, if you like, because it's something that I tend to write a lot. So I write a lot of LinkedIn publisher, as it is now, posts for clients, and I quite often get the question, should this be on LinkedIn or should this be on our blog? And more recently I've had, should we put this on LinkedIn or should we put it on our blog or should we put it on Medium, which is a new one, and I don't know the answer to that, and I'm quite sad we didn't ask Kate about that. I think her advice is really good, that if it's a very personal thing, then LinkedIn is the place for it, whereas if it's more of a brand thing, then the company blog is the place for it. The only problem with LinkedIn Publisher is it doesn't really show up in search, doesn't really get picked up, so a lot of that potential audience is lost, I think, when you use LinkedIn.
Sure, and I think the thing that I really like when I talked to Kate about that, and she just went, well, think about what people want when they go to your blog and what they want when they go to LinkedIn. Yeah. and put the right message in the right, it's that first principles stuff. It's the really obvious thing that you tend not to think about, because it's social media and then it's somehow magic.
Yes.
Dark arts rather than it's a marketing, promotional, it's a discussion, conversation type channel.
Yeah.
Where's your audience? Who are they? And what do they want? What do they need to know? Oh, right. Okay. It's that stuff.
Yeah, no, they're really good principles to bear in mind, and yeah, she did put it very clearly, so that was great. And I think the other thing, I'm just really grateful for the advice on where to look for, what's happening, what's new, the updates for what's going on in the world of social media. So I think she mentioned four sources, which I'm going to go away and look at all four.
Well, you'll be able to find them in the show notes. Certainly,
yes.
We'll put them in there. And also with that, for me, the sense of relief.
Yeah.
When a social media expert goes, no, it is really difficult.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
I
wonder if it was just me getting old and being kind of behind the curve, with all this stuff. Like, no, it really does change all the time and it's really annoying. And I was just like, I felt personal affirmation.
Yeah, that's right. It's quite reassuring to hear that. Yes, definitely.
And the thing about it showing the I think the personal, the like holistic personal side of the brand, you know, outside of the thing that you do and the thing that you say, you know, because when we're writing content, we try to be very useful, don't we? You know, and not kind of blowing our own trumpet or anything. But I know from experience from our own stuff, the things that people really connect with on social media a lot of the time are where someone's come in and they've done a, you know, a video case study about business in Cornwall and something, and so they want to feature us because we sit in Cornwall writing copy for people around the world. You know, and actually people like to see who you are and what you think about things as well. You know, as long as you don't really overdo it, you know, that was a nice reminder as well that that personality stuff is important.
Yeah, and I think that's something that can sometimes be a bit tricky for us as sort of external copywriters to kind of get that level of insight into sort of what goes on day to day within the clients. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, if there's a company and if you've got an in-house social team, it does sound like that's exactly the sort of thing that that team should be doing.
Absolutely. Well, the beauty of the podcast is that Kate is no doubt listening, because everybody listens to this podcast, right?
Hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody. Hello, all the people that haven't got off to Adam and Molly at B2B Marketing.
That's right. Oh, yeah, we've got rivals now.
We've got rivals. And they're good. It's really annoying.
Yeah, very good, yes.
Their interview with Brian was brilliant. You know, it's just, we have to raise our game. Anyway, the thing is, that Kate is no doubt listening. And so we didn't ask Kate about Medium, but it might be, Kate, if you're listening and you fancy just quickly recording a quick voice memo for us, telling us what you think of Medium and where it fits in. I'm sure we could play that out next month if you'd like to. And now if you don't do that, we'll sound stupid. So no pressure. And once again, we are out of time. That's all we have time for this month. We're in the process of putting together episodes on writing for the C-suite, quality checking your copy, and content for ABM. So if you have any thoughts, questions, or ideas about any of those, or any other topics you'd like us to cover, then do let us know. You can email us at podcast@radix-communications.com, or you can send us a voice memo, or you can find us on Twitter at radixcom. You can also find more content online and sign up for our monthly copywriting advice emails at radix-communications.com/insights. Until next time, remember, social media is like a house party. It's rude to turn up empty-handed. Bye.
Goodbye.
Okay, here is a bonus post-credits announcement. Fiona has just told me that we will put a picture of the new chair on our blog. And if you would like to send us an email with your suggestion of the name for the new chair, if you'd like to name our chair, we will pick a winner at random and send you... I don't know if we'll pick it at random. Will we pick a winner at random, or we'll just suggest the best name?
No, we'll pick the best one.
Right, we'll choose the best name.
Not at random.
Yes.
No, we'll choose on merit.
We'll pick it on merit. Absolutely right. Right, fine. We'll do that on merit then, and we might send you something nice in the post. So email
that
us.
That doesn't sound too threatening.
We'll send you something nice and unthreatening.
I can guarantee it will be nice.
Yes. Well, yeah, it will be. Might be a copy of Funnel, our board
game.
Who knows? but send us your suggestions of the name of our new chair. Hashtag name that chair. We have all the best hashtags. Right, we better go. This is far too much fun for one day.